This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
I'm Margaret Brennan in Washington, and this week on Face the Nation, international outrage grows as Vladimir Putin's brutal assault on Ukraine ramps up with increasingly barbaric attacks on civilians. Russian forces continue to struggle in their effort to take over the capital city of Kyiv, and Ukrainians persevere despite devastation and ruin in their homeland. We'll speak with Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin about the new weapons the U.S. is sending Ukraine and the delicate diplomatic dance to arm them. And after President Biden warns Chinese President Xi not to help Russia with their invasion, Chinese Ambassador to the U.S., Qin Gang, will speak with us exclusively. Ukraine's Ambassador Oksana Markarova will also join us, and we'll have a rare Sunday interview with Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell. Finally, we'll check in with former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb. It's all just ahead on Face the Nation. Good morning and welcome to Face the Nation. There is no end in sight, no off-ramp for the Russians, and seemingly no serious movement in negotiations for a ceasefire in the now 25 days long war in Ukraine. As we come on the air, the scenes of death and devastation in the port city of Mariupol are abhorrent, and the city is on the verge of being completely under Russian control. We've got a lot to get to today, and we want to begin with the latest news from Ukraine. And we'd like to warn you, some of the images you will see in this broadcast could be disturbing. Charlie Daggett has been in Ukraine since before the Russians invaded, and he reports today from Kyiv. Charlie?
Good morning, Margaret. The horrific situation unfolding in Mariupol took an even darker turn this morning. Ukrainian officials have accused Russian forces of bombing a school where hundreds were taking shelter and now claim residents are being forcibly taken to Russia. They lie where they died. So many bodies all over Mariupol, some buried right on the spot. Drone footage reveals the extraordinary destruction after weeks of relentless bombing, whole neighborhoods in ruins in what human rights groups describe as a catastrophe. City council officials say Russian soldiers are forcibly deporting several thousand residents to Russian territory, like this refugee center in the Russian port city of Taganrog. Resident Lyudmila Slivka said they didn't have much choice. The Russian soldiers gave us 10 minutes, saying, if you want to live, go. Her husband Victor said, the whole of Mariupol is gone. There's nothing left alive. In a late-night address, President Vladimir Zelensky condemned Russia's constant bombardment, saying the terror inflicted onto this peaceful city will be remembered for centuries. Hospitals have been overwhelmed with exhausted medics unable to keep up with the amount of civilian casualties coming through the doors. The civilian death toll is mounting as fighting rages in multiple regions across Ukraine. On the outskirts of Kyiv, Ukrainian troops are stuck in a brutal back-and-forth battle to keep the Russian offensive at bay. The capital's defense systems have intercepted some incoming missiles, but others have struck right in the heart of the city. Intentionally targeting civilians or not doing enough to protect them constitutes a war crime. And in this residential neighborhood in the capital and other cities, there's plenty of growing evidence. As Russia has stepped up its air campaign, the Russian Defense Ministry now claims it fired a second hypersonic missile since the invasion began. with Ukrainian forces having fought Russian troops to a standstill in some areas, a show of force that Russia still holds the upper hand in firepower. With growing international pressure unable to stop the fighting, the Ukrainian government has now urged China to join Western countries in condemning what it calls Russian barbarism. Margaret?
Charlie Daggett, thank you. The United Nations Human Rights Office today said that at least 902 civilians have been killed in Ukraine. That number is likely much higher. Joining us now is the Secretary of Defense, retired General Lloyd Austin, just back from a trip to Bulgaria and Slovakia, both NATO allies. Welcome to Face the Nation. Good to have you here in person, sir.
Thanks.
You just heard the horrific reports of what's happening inside Mariupol. The AP is reporting a school that held hundreds of civilians was deliberately targeted. Can you confirm that?
We've seen deliberate targeting of cities and towns and civilians throughout in the last several weeks. And again, I believe that he's taking these kinds of steps because, as was described earlier, his campaign is stalled. He's not been able to achieve the goals as rapidly that he wants to achieve as rapidly as he wants to achieve them. And so he's resorting to types of tactics that we see on display every day. And again, this is really disgusting. But again, my hat off to the Ukrainian people who have fought valiantly and remain determined to defend their country.
What you're describing are war crimes. What has been described by one local leader in Mariupol is that there are residents being shipped to camps. Is Russia about to take that city, which would be a strategic victory?
Well, hard to say. I mean, we've seen significant effort on their part to go after this city, go after Kyiv and other cities. They really want to begin to control this population centers. But they haven't taken it yet. And we've seen in the past that Ukrainians have counterattacked, that they've used their initiative to move things around on the battlefield. And they've presented some significant problems for the Russians.
Russia is also saying that it used a hypersonic missile at least twice in Ukraine so far. So this is a missile that travels, more than a mile a minute. It's very difficult to intercept. Is this weaponry game changer?
I would not see it as a game changer. I think, again, the reason that he's resorting to using these types of weapons is because he's trying to reestablish some momentum. And we've seen him attack towns and cities and civilians outright. We expect to see that continue. But I don't think that this in and of itself will be a game changer. You kind of question why he would do this. Is he running low on precision guided munitions? Does he have lack complete confidence in his ability to the ability of his troops to reestablish momentum? But I don't see this in and of itself a game changer. I cannot confirm or dispute whether or not he's used those weapons.
Mm-hmm. Well, the U.S. assessment that is public is that Russia's got approximately 90% of their assembled combat power. So if they've lost 10% of combat power in 25 days, can they still be effective?
Well, they're not being effective today in terms of their maneuver forces on the ground. They're
right.
Essentially stalled. And it's had the effect of him moving his forces into a wood chipper. You know, the Ukrainians have continued to attrit his forces, and they've been very effective using the equipment that we provided them, you know, anti-armor weapons, anti-aircraft weapons, and again, significant resolve on the part of the Ukrainian people.
One of the concerns is that if Vladimir Putin is cornered, that he would escalate to de-escalate, that he would go and use a weapon of mass destruction. Do you expect to hear more threats about nuclear weapons? Is that a real viable option for him?
I would just say that any threat of the use of a nuclear weapon, any rhetoric concerning the use of a nuclear weapon is very dangerous. And so I remain confident in our ability to defend ourselves and our capabilities. But again, I don't think that kind of conversation, that kind of rhetoric is helpful.
Mm-hmm. But you take it seriously.
Absolutely. And I'm confident in our ability to defend ourselves and defend our allies and partners as well.
One other option for a weapon of mass destruction that the Biden administration has warned about is a chemical or biological weapon. Vladimir Putin gave this chilling speech earlier this week where he claimed the Pentagon was supporting biological programs at dozens of labs in Ukraine, which the Biden administration has just said that's completely false information. China has repeated this as a talking point, though. Would using a weapon of mass destruction like this change the U.S. calculus? Is there a level of catastrophe here where the United States could not sit on the sidelines?
I think if a chemical or biological weapon was used, you'd see a significant reaction from not only the United States, but also the global community. And again, I don't want to speculate about what exactly would change our calculation. I think engaging in hypotheticals is probably not helpful here either. But I think this is a very serious step. And as you heard our president say, we won't take that lightly.
Mm-hmm. And when Vladimir Putin talks about that, you think it becomes more likely?
I think what we've seen from the Russians in the past is they're raising issues and creating a pretext so that if they did something in the battle space, they could blame it on somebody else, either Ukrainians or us, NATO. Mm-hmm. This could possibly be what we're seeing today.
Secretary of State Blinken has said private mercenaries are being mobilized to move into Russia or to move into Ukraine by Russia. Are you seeing Russia send in reinforcements?
We've heard them. We've heard from a number of sources that this is, in fact, going on. We've not seen mercenaries show up on the battlefield, to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So. And no reinforcements yet from foreign sources?
No.
Moscow is blasting the United States for pouring in weapons. You talked about all the things that are game changers. You say the anti-tank, the Stingers, the $800 million that the president authorized and the Secretary of State signed off on. When does that equipment begin to arrive? And what makes the most difference in terms of what we are providing Ukraine?
We've been providing this type of equipment throughout. And this enables us to provide more. In the last 2 weeks, we've provided over $300 million worth of equipment to Ukraine. And the $800 million that the president signed off on here just recently, mm-hmm, brings a total to over $2 billion in terms of the amount of security force assistance that we've been providing to Ukraine. I would remind you that we've had trainers there since 2014, along with some of our mm-hmm other allies. And not only have we provided them equipment, but they were ready to use that equipment once we provided.
The equipment that the Ukrainians say they want are to help close the skies, essentially. These S-300 systems, the Russian-made systems that are in Eastern Europe right now, how quickly can you get that into the hands of the Ukrainians?
If we can get it in, if our allies or partners do have this type of equipment
Slovakia
available,
says they're ready to go.
They are ready to go. And so what we'll do is we'll continue to work with them and continue to work with other allies and partners to not only create the conditions to provide that kind of assistance, but also work to ensure that they have the ability to protect their skies going forward as well.
So. All right. We will watch your trip to Europe again. Mr. Secretary, thank you for your time.
Thanks.
Face the Nation will be back in a minute. Stay with us.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Following their call on Friday, the White House said the President Biden had made it clear to President Xi what the consequences would be if China provides material support to Russia. Joining us now is China's ambassador to the United States, Qin Gang. Mr. Ambassador, good to see you. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So President Biden asked Beijing not to provide any kind of support to Russia. Is it your intent to go ahead and give a lifeline to Vladimir Putin?
On Friday, President Xi Jinping and President Biden had a video call. It was candid, deep, and constructive. President Xi Jinping gave China's position very clear. That is, China stands for peace, opposes war. China is a peace-loving country. We hate to see the situation of Ukraine come to today's, you know, like this. And we call for immediate ceasefire, and we are promoting peace talks, and we are sending humanitarian assistance to...
Will you send money and weapons to Russia, though?
Well, there's a disinformation about China providing military assistance to Russia. We reject that.
You won't do so.
What China, what China is doing is send foods, medicine, sleeping bags, and baby formula. That's not weapons and ammunition to any party. And we are against the war, as I said. You know, we will do everything to de-escalate the crisis.
Russia's foreign minister said yesterday that Moscow and Beijing will only get closer because of what's happening. Is he right?
Well, China and Russia has a trust relations. It was built over many years. It was built on many issues. You know, we have a long shared borders, as long as over 4,000 kilometers. So we have a lot of common interests. And this trust relations with Russia gave us a unique position.
Indeed, in
the international efforts.
That's
for
exactly
peace talks.
And that's exactly what the White House is saying, that you are in such a position of power to pick up the phone and call Vladimir Putin. Has Xi Jinping, your president, told Vladimir Putin to stop the invasion? Do you condemn it?
Actually, on the second day of Russia's military operation, President Xi Jinping did talk to President Putin.
Was that their last phone
call? Asking President Putin to think about resuming peace talks with Ukraine. And President Putin listened to it, and we have seen four rounds of peace talks you know, have happened. Let me continue. You know, China's trusted relations with Russia is not a liability. Actually, it's an asset in the international efforts to solve the crisis in a peaceful way, you know. And China is part of the solution. It's not part of the problem.
So are you saying, though, just so we're clear, are you saying Beijing will not provide financial support to Moscow to prolong this war?
China has normal trade, economic, financial, energy cooperations with Russia. As I said just now.
So it's not changing. You're not changing your relationship.
These are the normal business between two sovereign countries.
You mentioned
based on international order laws, including WTO rules. And
let's talk about those international laws, because 4 days ago, the International Court of Justice ordered Russia to stop its military actions. China abstained from that. The vote was 13-2. The only country that stood next to Russia was China.
Well,
that sounds like you are condoning and not condemning.
China makes its observation and conclusion based independently, based on the merits of the matter itself. On the one hand,
the United Nations Secretary General said that Russia invaded.
Yeah, we uphold. On the one hand, China upholds the UN purposes and the principles, including that the respect for the national sovereignty and the territorial integrity of all countries, including Ukraine.
Okay.
On the other hand, we do see there is a complexity in the history of the Ukraine issue.
And we are in the opinion. Would you be concerned if Russia amassed more than 150,000 troops at China's border?
Well, that's why we want
Just to be clear,
to have
a good, friendly,
good neighborly relations with Russia.
But you would recognize good, friendly, neighborly relations with 150,000 troops on the border of a neighboring country and then to send those troops into that country.
Well,
in those circumstances, why can't you condemn this as an invasion?
Well, don't be naive. Condemnation.
It sounds naive to say that's not an invasion.
It doesn't solve the problem. I would be surprised if Russia will back down by condemnation. What is urgently
Will they back down if your president asks Vladimir Putin to back down? Will your president ask Vladimir Putin to back
down? We have done so.
They rely on you.
And we will continue to promote peace talks and, you know, urge immediate fire. And, you know, condemnation, you know, only doesn't help. We need wisdom. We need wisdom. We need courage. And we need good diplomacy.
Well, Vladimir Zelensky says he would like to meet with Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Zelensky is in a bunker. Vladimir Putin is at a political pro-war rally right now. You can't have diplomacy when it is one country, the only one country willing to actually negotiate.
China has good relations with Russia, has good relations with Ukraine, and China keeps close communications with the United States and with Europe. They enable China to reach to all parties' concerns in the crisis. So China's unique role, you know, can help the peaceful settlement of the crisis.
I keep hearing you say that. I want to understand how China is helping. If you are not condemning, if you are not cutting off Vladimir Putin from continuing this war, this war that is roiling the entire global economy, sending food prices and energy prices spiking, China wants stability.
But we
why not cut off Vladimir Putin?
We have already made it very clear that, you know, national sovereignty and territory integrity of all countries, including Ukraine, should be respected and protected. But as I said, condemnation only cannot work. What we need is good diplomacy based on vision, wisdom, and the courage. And looking ahead, the endurer approach to the security issue in Europe.
I want to talk to you about one quick thing before we run out of time. You talked about how important the UN is and what respect you have for it. So a UN human rights panel said there are credible reports that 1 million Uyghurs are in a massive internment camp shrouded in secrecy. And the High Commissioner for Refugees and Human Rights will go to China soon. Will you give them unlimited access?
I totally reject that.
Yes, you will give access or no, you won't give access?
Such a so-called human rights violation in Xinjiang.
So you will against give access. Violation.
So, well, we are in talks with the Human Rights Special Commissioner of the, I, as far as I understand, there's an agreement.
All right. Thank you very much, Ambassador. Welcome back to Face the Nation. We turn now to Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, who joins us from Louisville, Kentucky this morning. Good morning to you, sir. Welcome to Face the Nation.
Good morning.
President Biden heads to Europe this week to meet with NATO allies. You helped give him about $13 billion in urgent support, along with the rest of Congress. What do you expect the president to deliver this week?
Well, we've given him plenty of money. I think he needs to step up his game. He's generally done the right thing, but never soon enough. I mean, let's take a look at what's happened here. The Ukrainians have killed more Russians in 3 weeks than we lost in Afghanistan and Iraq in 20 years. I think we ought to go into this believing the Ukrainians can actually win. And the way they win is for us to get these defensive weapon systems to them as rapidly as possible. For example, I am perplexed as to why we couldn't get the Polish Russian MiGs into the country. The Ukrainians have plenty of pilots and know how to fly them. Mm-hmm. In those Eastern Bloc countries, they have Soviet ground-to-air systems that the Ukrainians know how to work. We have the resources we've given to the president to get those weapons in there as rapidly as possible.
Right.
And then we provided loan guarantees to the countries that ship the weapons into Ukraine to purchase new weapons and probably better weapons from us. So what I'd like to see the president do is to reassure our Eastern Bloc allies, it's fine to go to Brussels, fine to go to Berlin. I'd like to see him go to Romania or Poland or to the Baltics. They're right on the front lines and need to know that we're in this fight with them to win.
There aren't a lot of policy differences here, really. You agree with the president that there should not be a no-fly zone. There's a matter of a few dozen MiG fighter jets there, but I don't hear a lot of policy differences from Republicans. In your view, does the $13 billion that you all just authorized ensure the funding of a Ukrainian insurgency if the government were to fall? Like, how long does this money last for?
Well, if they need more, we ought to give them more. This is a way to have a no-fly zone in effect, to have these weapon systems, ground-to-air weapon systems, give them a fighting chance to control the air, to shoot down planes and others that are seeking to control the air without the U.S. having a no-fly zone that has our own pilots in there. So I think the weapon systems are available. Look, I think we need to change our attitude here. The Ukrainians can actually win this thing, and that's the attitude we ought to have, that we're in it to help them win.
You are very clear in your language there, but others in your party have not been. Congresswoman Liz Cheney has said there's actually a Putin wing of the Republican Party these days. I think she's referring to Congressman Cawthorn, who called Zelensky a thug. Marjorie Taylor Greene said the U.S. should not fund a war the Ukrainians cannot possibly win. Is there any room in the Republican Party for this rhetoric, and why isn't there more discipline?
Well, there's some lonely voices out there that are in a different place. Looking at Senate Republicans, I can tell you that I would have, had I been the majority leader, put this Ukraine supplemental up by itself. I think virtually every one of my members would have voted for it. The vast majority of the Republican Party, writ large, both in the Congress and across the country, are totally behind the Ukrainians and urging the president to take these steps quicker, to be bolder. So there may be a few lonely voices off the side. I wouldn't pay much attention to them.
I want to ask you about what is about to get underway this week. You've said President Biden's nominee to the Supreme Court, Judge Brown Jackson, is very intelligent, clearly qualified, and highly likely to be confirmed. You personally have voted against her before. Are you inclined to vote for her this time?
You know, we had a very good conversation in my office, and I asked her, you know, typically these Supreme Court nominees of both parties have never answered any of the questions. What they typically say is that's something that might come before me, and I don't want to prejudge how I might actually vote. But I asked her to defend the court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Justice Breyer both publicly opposed court packing. That is, trying to increase the number of court members in order to get an outcome you like. That would have been an easy thing for her to do to defend the integrity of the court. She wouldn't do that. Yeah. So in the meantime, the committee will ask her all the tough questions. I haven't made a final decision as to how I'm going to vote.
You haven't made a final decision, but you're open to be persuaded? I mean, this is a historic nominee.
I'm going to listen to the evidence. I'm going to listen to the hearings. And by the way, she'll be treated much better than Democrats have typically treated Republican nominees like Clarence Thomas and Brett Kavanaugh. It'll be a respectful deep dive into her record, which I think is entirely appropriate for a lifetime appointment.
So you are open to voting for her then? Okay. We'll see.
I'm willing to listen to the testimony. That's why we have hearings.
Okay. I want to ask you as well about COVID aid. Dr. Fauci on another network this morning said Congress needs to authorize spending to continue to build up our supply of antivirals, of tests, and give the ability to provide booster shots. Republicans haven't been on board with this idea of more COVID aid. Dr. Fauci says we need it. Are you afraid of an empty arsenal?
Well, last year, the Congress passed a $2 trillion package, allegedly, for COVID, and passed on an entirely partisan basis. Much of that money is yet to be spent. We're willing to listen to the case that we need to spend more money on COVID, but they ought to reprogram some of this massive amount that was spent last year that's not out the door yet. So let's take a look at how to pay for it, and then we'll be happy to decide whether or not to support it.
Minority Leader McConnell, thank you very much for your time today. We'll be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
We turn now once again to Ukraine's ambassador to the U.S., Oksana Makarova. Madam Ambassador, thank you for coming back. I want to ask you about these horrific reports out of Mariupol. A local government official there said that the Russian military is moving people into camps and moving them out of the country. Do you have any insight into what is happening on the ground?
We're hearing all these horrific reports about targeting the school, the art school, with 400 people hiding in the basement, about, you know, retirement home in Kremine in elsewhere, where more than 50 people died from shelling. And what happens in Mariupol is an epitome of war crime. I mean, encircled city without food, without anything for 13 days, 14 now days, putting a resistance. And instead of simply opening a humanitarian corridors, as we agreed, and letting people out and letting supplies in, Russians are just trying to take the city down. So and people in the city continues to fight. So all of our hearts goes to them, and we're trying to do everything possible on diplomatic front and elsewhere to help the people of Mariupol.
Does the government have any idea exactly where these people are being moved? I mean, the reference to camps was compared to World War II when Nazis forcibly moved people into other countries.
Well, we saw it in, again, I don't want to say any information that we don't have the exact proof. I mean, right. We hear all the reports and have it. But we saw it also in the cities, smaller cities that were taken or occupied by Russians, where they would let people outside of the prison. They would try to catch our mayors and imprison them, catch the activists and imprison them. So that's an MO of the war criminals. And we see the protest in all the cities. You know, even in the cities, like on a daily basis, today in Kherson and others, people are coming out with protest against Russians, not only the armed forces, not only the police, but ordinary people. Everyone want them to go home.
This week, your president made an emotional speech to Congress. Congress authorized $13 billion in emergency support to Ukraine. But one of the things your president said was a personal appeal to President Biden to be leader of the nation, of this great nation, but also to be leader of the world. President Biden goes to NATO this week. How do you want him to lead the world? What is the U.S. not doing still?
Well, we've seen exceptional leadership from the U.S. during the past 3 weeks, and deterring Putin before the war, trying and helping us a lot during the first weeks of this war. Now, we all have to understand that even though we all are united in this effort in helping Ukraine, Putin is not changing his behavior. It's quite different. He's actually turning to terror and doing what the war criminals do, not what the armed forces are doing. So it's a clear message to all the civilized world that we have to step up too. Ukrainians will not give up. We will continue defending our homes. We don't have any other choice. And I think it's time that every passing day is a chance to stop this war. And every passing day, we have to be discussing, all of us together, the civilized world, the United States, NATO countries, but also others like China, discuss what is more we can do to stop it.
Ukraine's constitution references joining NATO, but your president has said, even just a few days ago, that Ukrainians must admit the West has indicated Ukraine won't be a member of NATO. Is he signaling room for more of a diplomatic opening there? I just keep hearing that the diplomacy goes nowhere.
Well, look, let me be very undiplomatic here. So when murderous maniac catches somebody or attacks somebody on the streets of the city, do we ask a person, a victim, you know, what is it you're ready to give up? Leg, arm to stay alive? What is it that you're ready to give up in order to be alive? No, we call the police, we stop this, and then we discuss what can we do to punish the criminal and help the victim. So I think this is where we are right now. We are fighting heroically, our armed forces and people, to defend our home. Now, of course, from the day one, our president said, we would like this to stop, we are ready to negotiate. Negotiate does not mean to surrender. We are not ready to give up on either our dreams or on the territorial sovereignty or integrity. But we are ready to negotiate, even with the brutal enemy, in order to stop it. And we are asking all of our friends and allies to help us to, A, fight successfully, but also to put all the pressure so that Russia negotiates.
Secretary of State Blinken said this week that a simple withdrawal of troops by Russia won't meet the U.S. standard for lifting sanctions. Something more irreversible needs to happen here. What is he laying out here? What is the Ukrainian vision?
Well, I will let Secretary Blinken to say what he said. But for us, clearly, I mean, it's a brutal attack. We've lost people. Many of our cities are destroyed and still are being destroyed. We've lost 60 universities completely. I mean, they are erased from the. So we need this to stop. They need to stop and get out from Ukraine. But we also need to be talking about reparations, about the security guarantees and everything else. Mm-hmm. We need to know that this attack, which I want to remind, is not the first attack. Russia right. attacked us in 2014. Mm-hmm. Russia attacked us in 1918. So we know that the goal that Russia has in this now, as it used to have in the past, is to destroy Ukraine.
Ambassador, thank you for your time. As always, we'll be back in a moment.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
We turn now to another issue of increasing concern, that of the rising number of COVID cases, particularly in China and Europe. Our Liz Palmer reports from London.
Hong Kong is building vast isolation hospitals to house COVID patients. It's shut down businesses, beaches, and public transport, but even so, currently has the highest COVID mortality rate on Earth, due largely to unvaccinated old people. Right next door, mainland China is fighting to stave off disaster. It kept COVID largely at bay for more than 2 years, with draconian lockdowns, electronic monitoring, and mandatory testing. But now, Omicron has taken hold. China has just reported its first deaths in more than a year, along with almost 2,000 new cases. 37 million Chinese are currently under lockdown. And about 50% of people over 80, 17 million of them, have not been fully vaccinated. Europe, too, has seen a surge in infections. The week Britain dropped all COVID restrictions, even tests for arriving travellers, UK hospital wards began to fill up.
We're starting to see an increase in our patients who need to be admitted and treated for coronavirus.
The good news is the death rate hasn't gone up, and the surge does seem to have peaked. And finally, heroism in Kharkiv, Ukraine, where, in spite of the war, doctors kept on treating their COVID patients and set up a bomb shelter in the basement, just in case.
It's now just over 2 years since the WHO declared COVID a pandemic, and this week they reminded us that, in their estimation, we're only about halfway through. Margaret?
Elizabeth Palmer in London. Thank you. We're joined now by former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb. He's also a Pfizer board member, and he joins us from Westport, Connecticut. Good morning to you, Doctor. I even tripped up on your name. My goodness, I haven't seen you in a few weeks. And now I just need to get your perspective on what BA2, this new variant, means. Should we be concerned about a wave?
Well, look, I don't think we're going to see a big wave of infection, but we're going to see some uptick from where we are right now. Right now, we're at very low levels of infection. We have 9 cases per 100,000 people per day. Those are levels that we haven't seen since last June. There are about 20,000 people currently hospitalized. And I think we're going to continue to see low levels of infection through the summer. But before we get there, we're probably going to see some tick up of infection like the Europeans are seeing right now. Maybe not as pronounced, and there are indications that the UK is already peaking, but some increase in infections. And that's a result of BA2, which is probably 30 to 50% more transmissible than the Omicron variant that became prevalent here, as well as the lifting of mitigation. People are going out more, they're interacting more, and some declining immunity from people who were boosted a long time ago or infected a long time ago. We're relying on that immunity, and that immunity isn't as pronounced right now. So we are going to see an increase in infection. I think this is going to be a real test of whether or not we're able to live some semblance of normalcy and not reach back to the kind of mitigation that we relied on in the past, and I don't think we'll be doing that while still protecting the vulnerable. And so far right now, I don't know that we're taking all the steps we need to be taking to protect vulnerable people to weather this bump and potentially another surge heading into next fall.
You said if you were vaccinated a long time ago, Mr. Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, was on this program last week and said immunity starts to wane 4 months after your injection. A lot of us are right there right now. How long do we wait to get a booster? Another dose hasn't been authorized for wide use yet.
Yeah, look, the data that's coming out shows that the protection from the vaccine, particularly three doses of the vaccine, but even two doses of the vaccine, is substantial and durable. If you're talking about protection against severe disease and hospitalization, and there's been some recent studies really supporting this. But in terms of protection from symptomatic disease and from infection, that does start to wane more immediately because that's dependent upon circulating antibodies, which after a period of time start to decline and aren't as prominent in your blood. I think this is really a six-month vaccine in terms of providing really meaningful protection against symptomatic disease and infection. And this is likely to become an annualized vaccine for the majority of Americans. I think for those who are vulnerable, you should think about getting a shot every 6 months while we're in a high prevalent environment. And in fact, the shots are authorized for that use. For people who are immunocompromised, there is authorization right now for a fourth booster.
Pfizer has applied for a booster for people 65 and over, Moderna more widely. So do generally healthy adults need to get this too, or just the immunocompromised?
Yeah, I think it also depends on what the environment is. If we're in a low prevalent environment, as we're likely to be this summer, I think most Americans who had three doses of vaccine will have sufficient protection going through the summer. We don't, after all, get a flu vaccine in the summertime, even though the flu vaccine only affords about 6 months of protection because the flu season only lasts about 6 months through the fall and the winter. So you don't worry about contracting a respiratory pathogen in the summertime. And I think the risk is going to be pretty low this summer. I think after we have this bump in infection, we're going to get down to low levels. Heading into the fall, I suspect a lot of Americans will want to get another vaccine. You know, some people are going to call it a fourth booster. I think it's heading towards this vaccine becoming an annualized vaccine, at least for the foreseeable future, until we really understand the epidemiology of this disease and understand whether this coronavirus starts to recede into the background like the four circulating strains of coronavirus that we've become accustomed to have.
But, I mean, you've talked about this for so long, that the risk of becoming this bifurcated society where it's those who can go out and those who are compromised or worried about infecting family members. I have small children under five who are not vaccinated, so I would put myself in that category. But now there's a cost because all the health restrictions are out. So you are choosing to isolate yourself if you are taking health restrictions. What is a health, like the average person, what should they do? Should they still be wearing masks?
Look, I think if you're vulnerable, if you're someone who's very vulnerable to this infection, in a high prevalence environment, or in an environment, if you're going into a setting that's high risk, a confined space indoors, there are things you can do to protect yourself in that setting. One-way masking does work. Even if everyone else isn't wearing a mask, if you're wearing a high-quality mask, you're going to get a good degree of protection from that. And a lot of people continue to wear masks. There's also a lot of therapeutics available now, more than we had, better tools than we had earlier in this pandemic. I think understanding how you can get access to those is important.
Dr. Gottlieb, thank you for your time today. We'll be right back. Images from the war in Ukraine continue to dominate hearts and minds around the world. One that's gotten increasingly familiar is that of the defiant and besieged president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, encouraging Ukrainians, lobbying for help, and pleading with Putin to stop. Last week, Zelensky took his message to Canada, to the U.S. Congress, and plans to address the people of Israel today. Saturday, he spoke to Switzerland, a country that stayed neutral in World War II, but was one of the first to condemn the Russian invasion and express support for Ukraine. Translated in English, he said, "It is impossible to stay away from the fact that in the 21st century, in the heart of Europe, hundreds of rockets and bombs are flying at peaceful cities. It is impossible to stay away when the army of the world's largest state, albeit only in size, directs all its deadly potential to destroy us, to destroy hospitals, ordinary schools, churches, universities, maternity hospitals, residential areas. It is impossible to be indifferent when children are killed." The role of a journalist is to find facts and report the truth, and above all, stay fair and neutral. But much like Switzerland, we find ourselves agreeing with Volodymyr Zelensky that some facts are so horrific that equivalency is both false and morally wrong. Above all else, it is most important to be truthful. For Face the Nation, I'm Margaret Brennan in Washington. Today's guests were Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, Chinese Ambassador to the U.S. Qin Gang, Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell, Ukraine's Ambassador to the United States Oksana Markarova, and former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb. The executive producer of Face the Nation is Mary Hager. This broadcast was directed by Shelley Schwartz. Face the Nation originates from CBS News in Washington. For more Face the Nation, we're online at facethenation.com. And you can follow Face the Nation and CBS Radio News on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Face the Nation's also on our digital network, CBSN, at 12 p.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday.
If you like Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings, early and ad-free on Wondery Plus.
Are you ready for an all-new season of Survivor? You better be, because Survivor 46 is here, and it's 90 minutes of twists and turns you don't want to miss. Better yet, after each episode, there's a brand new episode of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. Each week, we go behind the scenes of the episode's biggest moments, taking you into the how and the why things happened. And this season, we're very lucky to be joined by an expert, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares.
What is up? I'm thrilled to be joining this team and to be giving you my take on how and the why players made the moves they did, what it takes to outwit, outplay, and outlast, and to ask Jeff some questions, because even after 26 days out there, there is still a lot for me to uncover.
Bring it, D. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.